Once again, Kuzu Zangpo, and hello to everyone. It's only very appropriate for us to start with Bodhicitta when we have an author on Bodhicitta as our guest. So let us bring our awareness to here and now and cultivate the positive, benevolent intention to make this session beneficial to both oneself and others for a moment. So Dorji, thank you for joining this conversation, and it's a great pleasure to see you. We haven't seen each other for several years now, and here to talk about Buddha nature with you sort of takes me back to our Shedra days in South India. and we have this forum to promote Buddha nature and sort of positive thinking, mainly because the world today needs a lot of positive vibes and positive mindset. I think we are faced with lots of negativity bias, wicked world syndrome, even sort of the selfish gene. So there's a lot of sort of negative energy floating around, and Buddha nature is one thing in the Buddhist heritage that I think can counteract that. You have been a scholar and also a practitioner, I would say, on this. So it's a great honor to have you with us to discuss this. And before I get into the real conversation, I always start by asking our guest, how and when did you come across this topic of Buddha nature? And what is the impression you got, if you have any memory of it? That will help us also understand your spiritual journey.
Okay. Thank you so much. First of all, it's the Sutta Foundation and also Karma. I cannot imagine a better dialogue partner than yourself, because I think it's almost like when I went through the points, I thought this is something that's very wonderful that we could share. I think, as you know, I think my first encounter with the idea of Tathagata Garbha or Buddha nature would be maybe 1987, when we started studying Kenpo Yenden Jamsu's commentary on Domsum Namge, Domsum Rigzin Jumo, Ngari Penchen's Domsum Namge. And of course, in course of time, we cannot detach, I think, the concept of Buddha nature from the rest of the Buddhist ideas. So you name any major Indian works with of belonging to Maitreya Asanga complex, or what I would like to call Manjushri Nagarjuna complex, and all the Tibetan authors, like if we may say so, Ronglong Jusum works, inevitably we encounter Buddha nature, right? Of course, the immediate interest that was awakened in me is, of course, as you know, Mipham's commentary on the Ratnagota Vibhaga and his tool, I would like to say, Lion's Roar, Shendong Sengengaro and Rangtong Sengengaro. These would be the immediate sort of a work that really inspired me. And since then, of course, even after having come to Hamburg, I learned a lot. I tried to deepen at least the historical development of the Buddha nature theory, especially like the publications of Sefer Ruig and Professor Schmidt Thompson and so on. So it is an ongoing sort of a journey. And indeed, I mean, it keeps on, it never stops to inspire. I mean, as you can, we shall, I think, get an opportunity to talk about it, the implications of the Buddha nature theory, the positive implication.
Yeah, so I read your piece where you talk about Buddha nature in the Nyingma tradition, and I think this will be the focus of our conversation today. Now, you mentioned how these traditions don't as such have a sort of a monolithic position, but often we talk about the Nyingma position or the Kagyu position when the main patriarchs or the main scholars of this tradition have a position. So I think it may be best for us to go through the history of Tibetan Buddhism and see who are the major Nyingma sort of scholars on Buddha nature and what their positions are like. And the source of Nyingma being the early transmission in the 8th and the 9th centuries. At that time, who would you consider as the main Buddha nature advocates?
First of all, me perhaps, as you, as we all know, the major scriptural sources for the Buddha nature have already been translated during the earlier period. Mm-hmm. We can just name one significant scripture. There is the Tathagatagarbha Sutra itself, which is an mm-hmm. earlier translation. So that is, I mean, from the sutric scripture side. But then on from the tantric scripture side, as you know, the so-called Nangji Desum, starting from Guhyagarbha Tantra, we do have the idea of Buddha nature. There it's called Sugatagarbha, by the way, and Dorje Pinyingbo, and not the Tathagatagarbha, which is to be, I call it a kind of a metrical variant of the Tathagatagarbha, although in Tibetan it would not make much difference. And then from a more Shastric source, I think we should take sources such as Kamalashila's Umanawa, Madhyamaka Aloka, and even Kawapeltse, Chorolui Yetsen, etc., who start mentioning Buddha nature or related ideas like the Tepa Chik, the one vehicle theory about the Gotra, the Rik, etc., and so on. So we should, I think, start from the, even from a Shastric level, we can start. But as I hope it will become clear in course of our conversation, is that the Buddha nature theory in a very narrow sense seems to be, I would like to say, a little bit subordinated to the larger, let us say, the philosophical project of the Nyingma, which I would like to say almost a little bit like the Hongaku of the Tibetan school would be the primordial ab initio awakening, the idea of Yene Sangye Pe Namsha. I think the Buddha nature is kind of somewhat subordinated within this larger theory of the of what I call Yesangye Pe Namsha. So, so if you look at the Memata Cheng by Padmasambhava, you see the propositions, the major proposition for Nyingma philosophy has been spelled out, like Chithamji Yene Sangye Pao, Chithamji Yusawa, etc. But you don't have the explicit reference to the concept or the term. Either Dejin Shekpa Nyingpo or the Dewar Shekpa Nyingpo is not mentioned. So I think when we try to understand the theory, the reception and the transmission of the Buddha nature, we should see within the larger context of the Nyingma philosophy and not just an isolated case of the Buddha nature, I think. But I think it will become more clear when you go on discussing.
But I would have thought, you know, that the Nyingma and the Vajrayana concept of Yesangepa, primordial enlightenment, would be more of a subset of the Buddha nature discussions rather than Buddha nature being a subset of the bigger Yesangepa concept. How do you see it? I personally think that Dzogchen and Mahamudra ideas of primordial enlightenment would have developed out of the Indian sort of Buddha nature theory to begin with.
I think, let us say now, although now we are already reaching Rongzongpa, if you look at, if we come to Rongzongpa.
Who we will discuss next is.
But maybe when we shall, it will become more clearer when we reach Rongzongpa. Because we want to cover as much as possible the issues that you had raised.
Yeah, what I want for the audience to really take away from what we have said so far, especially with regard to Buddha nature in the early period, is the sutras, most of the Tathagatagarbha sutras or the sutras, the teachings on Buddha nature have already been translated. And then you have a figure like Padmasambhava who writes the Mengaktawe Tengwa, which spells.
Your network, there was an interruption, so. Please repeat.
Apologies, yes. I was just summing up what you were presenting earlier about most of the sutras on Tathagatagarbha having been already translated in the early period. And then such a figure like Padmasambhava, who has such a important role in the entire Tibetan Buddhism, has authored Mengaktawe Tengma and discussed Buddha nature. So that's that for the early period. But as we come forward, I think the earliest scholar from the Nyingma side in the later translation period would be Rongzongpa, right? And you have done work on him. So if you can, yes, talk about Rongzongpa and his position on Buddha nature.
Yes, I wish we had much more longer time. I would like to really discuss every little detail of something related with Buddha nature, but we have to be pragmatic. Yes, once I pointed out that as opposed to King Hindarbhapa, who seems to interpret the concept of Svayambhu Jnana, Rangjungi Ishi, or self-occurring gnosis, he seems to interpret the Tathagata Gava, whenever it occurs, within in the light of the Rangjungi Ishi, not vice versa. So this is an important point. And I see his Rangjungi Ishi, the little work devoted to Rangjungi Ishi, which now Kenpo Gesang from Mysore, Nyingma Research Center is working, Kenpo Gesang Denru. So this work is a little bit like a treatise on his, let us say, tantric version of the Tathagata Gava in the form of Rangjungi Ishi. So this point is very important in my view. And second point is, of course, we have to remind ourselves that Rongsongpa did not know the Ratnagotra Vibhaga. It was not yet translated. And we don't seem to have any indication that he knew the Gyulama or the Ratnagotra Vibhaga. But interestingly, I must say, this is my impression, I need to investigate further, is, you know, the Tensik Namba Sum in the Gyulama, like the three kinds of reasoning justifying, let us say, the existence of the Buddha nature in every sentient being. I'm a bit surprised to see that there is a similar kind of a three arguments, but of course, the thesis is different, is to prove or to try to make a case for the position that even the mind of an ordinary sentient being is already characterized by Rangjungi Ishi. Yeah? Mm-hmm. So there is some striking similarity in these three kinds of reasoning. But of course, you are also you are an expert on Mipham. I was just want to throw this question to all of us, is using the four reasonings, Rikpashi, to make a case for the Tathagata Gava, whether it is his own novelty or there is somebody else have done before, it's still unclear to me. So I thought it would be an interesting point just to, but Rongsongpa doesn't use the four reasonings to prove that there's even the mind of an ordinary sentient being is characterized by Rangjungi Ishi. Yes.
You're basically saying that Rongsongpa, without having access to the Ratnagotra Vibhaga text, actually expounded something very similar to the three reasonings in the text, right?
Yes.
But not four reasonings that we would find, for instance, in Chisong Desen's Kayandakpa Sema.
Yes. Although he does use Rikpashi elsewhere and on many occasions for different purposes. But maybe we can already now give it in advance. I mean, we thought we'll do it a little bit more systematic, but maybe I'll forget. Is indeed, if we compare now with Dolbopa or even Longchenpa, now we will come to Longchenpa, but I think Rongsongpa, we can characterize his position on the Buddha nature or the reality is really what we call apophatic, rather than cataphatic, or rather negative intellectualist, more a negative intellectual rather than a positive mystical one. Mm-hmm. There are two important main philosophical positions that somehow, if he knew the Ratnagotra Vibhaga, he would have found or used or even harmonized the idea that the rootlessness of all phenomena is the root of all phenomena. This is illustrated beautifully in the Ratnagotra Vibhaga, as we all know. And this is also his main philosophical position as propounded by Vimalakirti Nidesha Sutra, Ratnaguna Samchaya Gatha, and many others. So Shimetsadil, in other words, what we call Shimetsadil, I think in a way he would have said it is propounded also in Ratnagotra Vibhaga. And this is one common aspect, which he would have had no problem accepting the Ratnagotra Vibhaga's central philosophy. Another position is, we know that when we talk about the Tathagata Gava, we inevitably have to talk about the evaluation of the three Dharma chakras, the first one, second one, and third one. And of course, with regard to Tathagata Gaba, the middle, Kabarpa, and the Tama, these two becomes very pertinent. And I feel that Rongzongpa's way to reconcile the teachings of the so-called the second turning of the wheel of the Dharma and the third would have been the Minebe Nyangen Deva concept, apratishthana nirvana, non-fixed nirvana. Mm-hmm. So these two things, I mean, one apratishthana nirvana concept and the rootlessness of all phenomena seems to be propounded also in the Ratnavata Vibhaga, which he would have easily found compatible with the rest of his philosophy, which is called then Chittamji Rabdu Minibarma philosophy.
Now, I mean, to me, this doesn't easily reconcile Ratnagotra Vibhaga presentation and Rongzongpa's position. You, in your article, you call the article Rongzongpa's ontological abyss. So Sarvadharma Apratisthana.
Yes.
Advocate of rootlessness, as you put it. So for him, rootlessness or the groundlessness, the lack of foundation is the foundation. Whereas Ratnagotra Vibhaga, on the whole, wants to approach it in a very cataphatic way, as you say, to present a foundation. I mean, Buddha nature is considered the ground, right? The sheath, shikham, the shinglingpo. So at least in terms of the presentation, one is really presenting a foundation, whereas Rongzongpa is denying that foundation. So I suppose Rongzongpa is very much like what later they would call a Rangtongpa.
Yes. He may be called a Rangtongpa par excellence. Yeah. It's true. You're right. Completely right. I think also methodologically, it would be a bit wrong to ascribe the entire Gyulama approach or the Ratnagotra approach to Rongzongpa, because I think in the very conception of the Ratnagotra Vibhaga, it is positive mystical, undoubtedly. And to impose the kind of a purely Rangtong approach to Gyulama would be not only anachronistic, but will not do a justice to the work itself. But with all the differences, now if we were to find one or few shared components, what would that be? And this is, by the way, it should also be a little bit similar, despite all the differences of the Rangtong Shentong differences. If we again carefully examine the Dolpopa's understanding of the Brahma, that in the Nyamsha perspective, right? So he himself is proposing that Chetamche, Chobadandeva, Nishprapancha. So there too, we see a shared, despite the Dolpopa's clear emphasis on the positive mystical side, we would still see some shared or a common ground, right? So you're right. I think Yulama's approach is completely different than Rongzongpa's approach.
For the audience, I think it's worth knowing that Rongzongpa really stands out as a very unique and exceptional scholar of his time, right? His writings are quite different from his contemporaries or later Tibetan authors in terms of style, in terms of presentation, in terms of his mode of analysis. So I can see how he's a super rationalist in arguing for this groundlessness or rootlessness, even with regard to the nature of the mind. But then if we move on, now the next big figure in the Nyingma history would be Longchenpa. Now the Nyingmapas often talk about Ronglong Namnyi, Rongzongpa and Longchenpa, both being addressed as the omniscient master. So Longchenpa seem to have a much more cataphatic approach. So much so that some people even thought he is a Shentongpa. how do you see that contrast?
Yes, when I first came to the West, I was a bit surprised to see. I cannot speak for the positions or the interpretation from other Tibetan Buddhist school, but the interpretation of Nyingma school of the Tathagata Gaba seemed to be somewhat undifferentiated and bit superficial. And one of the tendencies was to simply dump Longshinpa into one category of Shandongpa. If we compare, I think this is not only me, but I think Rago Choktru's, you know, Rago Choktru's commentary on Abhisamya Alankara, he characterizes Rongzhenpa has been emphasizing the kada aspect of the reality, and Longshinpa has been emphasizing the lunrup or the tugal aspect of the reality, and Mipham has been trying to harmonize and emphasize the zungjuk aspect of the thing. I totally agree with him in this regard. And indeed, this is also my impression, is that indeed, if we compare with the Rongzhenpa, certainly Longshinpa would be tilting what I call towards the positive mystical side. But importantly, I would like to say, not to the same degree as Dolbopas. This is very important. Because there are different shades and grades of Shandong, but one would think that neither Longshinpa nor even our contemporary Tibetan Buddhist masters like Dilgun Khyentse Rinpoche and Dzogchen Rinpoche, they would never tilt to the same degree as Dolbopa. So Dolbopa in this sense still remains unique. But maybe Kathok Tsawang Norbu and Geshe Mahapandita, they go a little bit further even than Longshinpa. Yeah? But all, even Lochen Dharmashri, which will come to Longshinpa, Kathok Rin Tsawang Norbu, et cetera, I do not think that they go all the way to Dolpa's degree of Shandong. Yeah? But compared to Rongzhenpa, certainly he's a positive mystical. He's a positive mystical in his approach.
Mm. Yeah, so I quite like Rago Choktru's presentation of Rongzhenpa focusing more on the Kadak, which for the audience sake, Kadak is more about emptiness aspect, the primordial purity, and then Longshinpa focusing more on the Lundrup, the spontaneous presence aspect, and how Mipham tries to bring the two together. That's a very powerful way of summarizing these three sort of intellectuals. What I think would be perhaps different is in Dolpopa's case, and also in the case of most other Shentongpa scholars, those who argue for other emptiness, if some of the audience don't know the Tibetan term Shentongpa, stands for people who argue that Buddha nature is not empty of its own nature, but only of adventitious affliction. So in that case, you seem to see the use of words like Nishprapancha, Dwedel, a lot, but not so much in the same way as, say, Tongpa. Whereas Longshinpa seem to clearly say that Buddha nature is actually Tongpa and Selwa.
Dolpopa may not quite go to the extent to say Buddha nature is Tongpa. It's Tongpa of maybe some other Atman, but not of itself, right? So do you think that there is a distinction there, even in terms of choosing the words?
Yes, certainly. Even when you say Chuchin Dang Chunyi is Ngo Chikpa, you would have a lot of difference, certainly. And also the way we understand Tongpa, even I think Rongzhenpa is very differentiated even in the use of Tongpa. He would say that there is a narrow sense and a very strict sense and so on. Even Tujel, maybe even Yogacara sources would use the word Tujel, but that's certainly not in the same way that that the Madhyamika scholars or the Tathagatagarbha scholars would use. But in my view, one important distinction that I believe to have discovered, and I'm so sorry that I couldn't deliver this paper to Marcus for the publication. We had a conference in Vienna on the Tathagatagarbha, and what I was trying to say in that paper is to try to find out exactly the relationship between Tathagatagarbha theory and the Pratitisamutpada. And this is very telling because that would show exactly the difference. For example, it is very clear that for Dolpopa or for many Shentongpas, if something is Pratityasamutpada, you presuppose that the phenomena must be duje conditioned, right? But there's no way for Dolpopa to consider Tathagatagarbha to be conditioned and somehow can called somehow that one can characterize it as Pratityasamutpada. Then I was trying to compare this exact position with regard to Rongzhenpa. How does he see? What is its exact relationship? And in the end, I must say I was a bit surprised to find out is that they're in, to a certain extent, they seem very similar. For example, there is even a very technical word. I tried to write it down. I forgot. What is this called? Now maybe I'll forget about this technical term. Rongzongpa presupposed this idea, which is very popular everywhere, and Nipam cites it, and everybody cites it, is the Chuchu Nyangali Debelhape Chuchi in a Deamilam Danjumata. I mean, we know all of this. Yeah. And Jangchup too, the Bodhi or Nirvana too is illusory. Yeah? This is completely unacceptable from a Dolbupa's standpoint. Yeah? Mm. There's no way Nirvana in its absolute sense can be Juma Damilam Tabu, right? So for Dolbupa, actually, Juma Damilam Tendel or Juma Damilam Tabu is only half the phenomena that, that is conditioned and samsaric, never connected with the Tathagata Gama. But Rongzongpa too knows this, and he says, you have chutam. There is a statement. There is a statement, which is very categorical, where you can make no exception. And there is a statement where you first make a categorical statement and you retract it, saying that you see every phenomena is, or all phenomena is illusory except, except Nirvana. Sorry, our female members of the audience. Of course, is. Bime are all like Juchen, like maybe you can say, I don't know, skillful or seductive, whatever, except Dachoma, a female arhat, right? So you, on the one hand, you have a categorical statement and you retract it by making another exception. Yeah? So this is true with the, he knows this statement. So it's all phenomena Jumatabu except Nirvana. But this is very important. Rongzongpa does retract the idea that Nirvana cannot be illusory, but the reason is completely different. Why can Nirvana not be said to be characterized by illusoriness? Because ultimately he says, so long as you give an characteristic to Nirvana and samsara, you can talk of illusoriness. This is his standing point. So long as you give a characteristic, at least on the conventions, okay, this is Nirvana, it has its characteristic, etc., you can talk of illusoriness. But the point is, ultimately, or really, or actually, neither samsara nor Nirvana has ever any characteristics. So there's no way you can define this as illusoriness, etc. So he's retracting in a way, you see? And I think the one example that will make here is the his example of mirage water, right? So his indivisibility of the true mode of reality, Dambanyi Ermepa, can only work if we keep the example of mirage water. So the virtual presence of mirage water and the actual absence of real water is one and the same. And this, in this regard, his indivisibility is only in this sense. So in other words, when you see a mirage water, there had never been a water, any water, and you may or may not see, but there never has been water. This, in only in this sense, it is a Dambanyi Ermepa for him. And I think this is in a way also made clear by Mipham, who says, kedan kemi nyambe de umelam gitonj, kewa dan kewa mebe nyamba. And I think Nagarjuna and many sutric scripture is that that which seem to appear on the basis of causes and conditions have never arisen, never. So this is only in this sense is Dambanyi Ermepa. And I think if we miss this point, we will never understand Rongzongpa's idea of absolute reality and that which is equitable with Tathagata Gama. He clearly equates Dejin Shekpin Yingpo with the Dambanyi Ermepa. So here we see, a difference.
I think for the sake of the audience who are not totally familiar with these ideas of absolute and conventional realities, and we also find these two sets of two truths, right? In the, perhaps Rongzongpa and Longchenpa didn't spell it out as much, but we have the figure of Mipham later on
using the hermeneutics of the two truths, two sets of two truths. And so what you presented with regard to Rongzongpa seemed to be more aligned to the two truths of appearance and emptiness, Nang Tong De Ni, how they are indivisible, like the lack of water and the appearance of the water in the mirage being indivisible. So that's one. But then you find this Nenang De Ni, you know, the two truths of abiding reality, the abiding nature and what appears. And perhaps Rongzongpa is focusing more on the first set of two truths, whereas Longchenpa talks more about the second set of two truths. What do you think?
Yeah, in a way, I think we may say something like that. In this, in the article, actually, I'm not, in the end, it didn't come out quite well, but in the article called Where the Buddhas and Siddhas Meet, I try to talk about Mipham's, I try to characterize Mipham as a Zungjugma par excellence, as a Yuganada Vadin. And there I also try to discuss these models of, now it's a little bit difficult, should we call the models of truth or reality, etc. But never mind. It is indeed, Mipham was the one who tried to not only talk about these truths and realities, but also try to offer a, I think, mechanism or kind of a scheme to understand. And there in that article, I also try to point out that one of the maybe weaknesses of our weaknesses in evaluating Shentong, Rangtong, especially in understanding Dolgopa's position, is that we have confused the categories or our perspectives or our scheme. We use a scheme that Dolgopa doesn't accept or it is not relevant for him, and then impose this scheme on his system. Therefore, we find all kind of a problem. But I think we will have to understand, try to use his scheme to understand his position. And in this case, indeed, I think Mipham's Nenang Deni would be much helpful. But I must say that Rongzongpa, in a very subtle way, already presuppose this, he calls Yishi Dendam. Yeah? For example, considering a Yishi to be Dendam, automatically presuppose that this is not a Nenang Deni. But some kind of, there's another way of looking at the, what is absolute and not. So I think the idea that are very in an incipient stage was made more explicit by, and maybe I'm afraid that Longchenpa too is, in his different work, we might find different models. But certainly I suspect that we would find both models presupposed by him in. But I must admit that my focus had more been on Mipham and Rongzongpa rather than Longchenpa. I think there are other experts who have been dealing more with Longchenpa. But I think you are right. But we should maybe keep in mind that we might find both models in his different writings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So let's talk about the impact of these three big figures that we have covered, Rongzongpa, Longchenpa, and Mipham. Mm-hmm. They sort of represent the Nyingma position right now. Their works are the main text in the Nyingma scholastic curriculum. After Mipham particularly, now you can see how the Nyingma scholastic system also develops. Nyingma, before that, was primarily a practice-oriented, ritual-oriented tradition, it seems. And Buddha nature comes also through the Therma teachings, but not so much of philosophical discussion that can be found there. But certainly Longchenpa's writings, then later on Mipham's scholarly writings seem to give a new sort of boost to the sort of scholastic work in the Nyingma tradition. Today, if you look at the Nyingma world, how do you see the impact going in your interpretation of the Nyingma study of Buddha nature? What can be done to make it richer, or is it already so rich and has reached the optimal level?
maybe it depends on what you want to achieve by studying these ideas, but now I consider myself as a historian of ideas. And also, I think one of the collateral damage of my training in the West is that I think I became more and more interested in the historical development of these ideas, and not only within Nyingma, but also trying to understand the position of any given Tibetan or Indian scholar and see, I think the ultimate question that we need to ask is, have we managed to understand the position of that particular work and an author in a way that the author or the work itself would have wished to be understood, you know? And in this regard, I think we still need to do a lot of work. And I myself am not sure whether my understanding is okay or not, but I think we can still continue and also try to find Indian sources and earlier Tibetan sources and so on. But now coming to the impact of this Ronglong Jusum, I think one, we have to understand always in relation to the Prasangika Madhyamaka and or Sarvadharma Aparisanavada. I realize that we cannot do justice if we only, if we focus the Buddha nature theory in a very narrow sense and isolate it from the rest of the intellectual edifice of these three figures. For example, I think there are common grounds for all of these three authors. I think we should recognize that there are certain common grounds, but there are major differences between these three. One difference is, especially apparently it's very clear that Rongzongpa was a so-called Sarvadharma Apratisthanavada, Chuthamjo Rabdu Minebramo. So we can say one who proposes that no phenomena has ever any ontological or metaphysical substratum. So this is his major philosophy. And how about Longchenpa? Longchenpa's background, he comes from Sangpu Nyutok tradition. He has been maybe colored with the training that he had in the Sangpu Nyutok. But before, I think he's, before he's a Madhyamika, Prasangika Madhyamika, he is a Dzogchenpa. So in the end, he manages to put Prasangika Madhyamaka above the Sarvadharma Aparisanavada, but still keeping the Prasangika Madhyamaka view only at the level of the Paramitayana and reserving the rest from the six tantric system all the way to Dzogchen as completely separate status. But if you look at Rongzongpa, his Sarvadharma Aparisanavada is not a line, I say. It is a spectrum, it's a range. And the lowest range starts from the system associated with sutric scriptures such as Vimalakirti Nidesha, Gandhavyuha Sutra, Ratna Guna Samchaya Gatha, Varja Chetika, etc. So as my attempt to summarize this position, the difference is, I say, Rongzongpa's Sarvadharma Aparisanavada starts where Longchenpa's Prasangika Madhyamaka stops. So it is very difficult to say, is he a Madhyamaka? Rongzongpa is a Sarvadharma Aparisana, and his lower range starts from Sutra all the way to culminating to Dzogchen, with different degrees of varying degrees of, clarity, non-duality, etc. Even the Dange, the Nitartha Niyartha, that provisional and definitive distinction is made purely on the basis of this criteria. So there is a major difference. And I think Mipham's legacy is really, I would like to just straight away say that Mipham's impact is that I think he wanted to, I would like to say, re-identify or give an identity to the Nyingma, his school. And I almost like to think that his melam, Tengi Gepe melam, is a manifesto of who or what a Nyingma should be. And in his project, Rongzongpa and Longchenpa seems to be used as his mentors or idols and idealistic figures. So if you want to be a Nyingma, you should orient yourself according to these two giants. Yeah. So I think this is his project. This is the intellectual project of his. And I think that's how Rongzongpa and Longshinpa fits into Mipham's project, so to speak, as a model. Of course, there are other figures, as you can see in the Tengen Melam, the other important previous figures, but these two in the later, as an interpreters of the Nyingma doctrine, I think he's thought that they should be the mentors. They should be the icons or even the representatives.
Yeah, it's very fascinating how you put the three figures. I think Rongzongpa certainly has more influence from the sutras than Longchenpa perhaps. And Longchenpa uses quite a lot of experiential presentation. Plus, he is influenced by the milieu, and he lived in such a rich classical literary period. The 14th, 15th century has been one of the richest time, especially for Buddha nature studies. So the influence of Sangpo Newtok and many other scholars living around the same time. And Mipham, of course, you didn't touch on this, but I suppose he was influenced also by the Rime movement that yes. he was part of. Yes. And also my take on his push for Nyingma sort of scholasticism and a more robust Nyingma scholarship based on Longchenpa and Rongzongpa would be partly a reaction to the Gelugpa hegemony that a lot of the places where he spent time went through. So it's very interesting how this sort of social and scholarly milieu and the ideas around the time influences the way they look at Buddha nature. And all three, of course, are heavily influenced by Dzogchen in terms of their interpretation of Buddha nature, isn't it? Let's break for now and take questions. There, I think, are a couple of people who have posted questions. Let me see if there's any. Marcus, can you?
Yes, there's a number of interesting questions coming in from the audience. Thanks okay. to everyone who's here. It looks like there's quite a number of very well-informed people in the audience at the moment. So I'll just take them. Well, since you were just kind of talking about this earlier, I'm going to take this one first from David Higgins. In his commentary on the Mengap Dawe Trengwa, Rongzong briefly compares the causal or sutric concept of Deshik Nyingpo with the resultant or tantric concept of Changchuk Nyingpo, Bodhigarbha, which is equated with Bodhicitta itself and is acausal or groundless. Could you comment on the genesis and importance of this tantric Bodhigarbha, Changchuk Nyingpo idea in the Ngadar period?
Yeah, I think this is one of David's highlights of his study. I remember having read his work, and indeed, Changchuk Nyingpo seems to be, I would like to say, there is an ontological interpretation of Changchuk Nyingpo and a cosmological interpretation of Changchuk Nyingpo. And of course, in a philosophical context, you are no longer speaking about the cosmological or geographical Changchuk Nyingpo, which would be the Vajrasana, Dorjiden, Bodhimanda. But I think when we see in the Nyingma Tantric, especially in the Tantric sources, it would be, of course, it's a very nice idea, because instead of going to Bodh Gaya and sitting on the Vajrasana is right within the core of your being, right? And that is very much, I think, in conform with the Bodhicitta in its most absolute sense, Tathagata Gava in its most absolute sense, or maybe Rongzongpa in his Nawal Haribu would have said, Kusung Tugi Dorjigi Kilkor, like it, Kusung Tugi Kilkor, which is, that would be also Yesangi Penam is kind of a connected. So indeed, this is a very important concept, but I think we should be, one thing I would like to make it clear is that Jiangshu Nyingpo in this sense is to be understood purely in a metaphysical, in an ontological sense and not in a cosmological sense. And we indeed find these key concept in several, I think, tantric sources. Of course, okay. maybe we should say, it's a little bit the interpretation of the compound, right? Changchuk Nyingpo, we can say, like, just like Bodhicitta. I think conservatively speaking, bodhicitta is a citta directed towards bodhi, right? This is how the compound was understood. But later on, some people, you exploited the potential of the term itself and said, one whose citta is already characterized by bodhi, yeah, that becomes bodhimanda. It's the same in the same concept. So here too, we see a kind of a very parallel between bodhicitta and bodhimanda, right?
Mm-hmm. And the question was asking about the ideas of Bodhigarbha and bodhicitta in this sense in another period. So I suppose Mengatawe Tengo would be one good source to point towards bodhicitta in this sense. Are there other sources that are specific to Nyingma that talks about bodhicitta in this sense from another period?
Actually, I must re-look at the, re-examine the Mengata Teng. I'm not so sure how explicit this concept in the Mengata Teng is. So I need to examine, so I cannot comment much on it. But nowadays, maybe we should just go through the Buddha Nexus and see how, I don't have a very concrete statement to make on this. Mm-hmm.
David's just adding, let me just jump in. David's just adding that Nup Chen Sangye Yeshe discusses it at length in his Mumpe Gocha.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, with the hope that it is indeed by Nup Chen Sangye Yeshe. I hope that. I very much hope that the authorship is correct.
But I think a lot of the tantras from another period, if whatever there is, would have discussed bodhicitta in this absolute sense, right? Like Sawan Ningpo does.
Yes, of course. And later on in the, I think even we have tantric Indian sources, I think in this absolute sense, there's not a problem. So again, I think I have to redig my, I don't know whether I mentioned in my bodhicitta study or not, I forgot. But one ontological bodhicitta is one of my topics.
So there's a number of other questions here. Are there any Nyingma Shedras today where the teachings of other emptiness are a central part of the curriculum? For example, might Katok Tsewang Norbu's teaching still be taught at Katok Monastery in Tibet? Did Venerable Karmapunso and Professor Dorje Wangchop receive teachings on other emptiness as a central part of their own education at the Maogyur Nyingma Institute?
Maybe Karma, you.
You first.
Maybe we would like to say, not formally, but once you get indulged in the idea of bodhicitta, you might dig every given source that you might find. And that would include, of course, the Shentong positions on by Shentong authors. But Tongtin Sengen and Shentong Sengen Aro, although let us say it's not written by a Shentong scholar, but I think many Nyingma scholars would start trying to look at or perceive Shentong through the Shentong Sengen Aro perspective. And in the end, I think it is not a matter of Shedra, but the individual preconceptions or inclinations, right? Even in the same Shedra, you may have different views with different preferences. I don't know Kama's preference, but I think every given scholar, any given Shedra would different preferences. So we really cannot say who is a Rangtong or Shentong. Kama, you...
There's certainly no Shentong literature sort of proper that is part of the Nyingma Shedra curriculum. I think perhaps the question, I don't know who the question came from, but there is a misconception, particularly in the secondary literature we find, of Nyingma also being sort of clubbed with Shentongpa scholars. So I was thinking of coming back to that later on with Dorje. But Nyingma Shedras, I don't think have any specific Shentongpa text as the part of their curriculum. Mm-hmm. One place where I think Shentong philosophy is still being studied as an official curriculum is Zamthang, it seems, the Jonang establishment in Amdo.
And maybe they do so also in other Jonang monasteries in Tibet and out abroad.
Mm-hmm. Maybe one should understand, historically, I think the actually, this was one of my points that I noted somewhere in the Rime, Karma was referring to Rime. Interestingly, how much Rime are you, or whether you are Rime or not, was somehow determined by whether you can incorporate Shentong theory into the system in a positive way, not just finding a some kind of a half-baked explanation, but really giving due credit, due status, etc. So if you are Rime, you are able to accept Shentong. Otherwise, you are a Riche automatically. This is very interesting, I think, in the overall Rime environment, I think. So, but this is very typical to Eastern Tibet. And I think many Rime scholars would have no problem or would have a very honest, sincere sort of appreciation and acceptance of the Shentong doctrine, I think.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So actually that's the next question was asking you to speak more about that, how Rongzongpa's Buddha nature interpretation and intellectual agenda was received and integrated in the Nyingma tradition through the Rime scholars in general. You already explicated several examples, but can you say something more about Rongzongpa's general impact and doctrinal imprint on 19th century Nyingma exegesis, and also within the hierarchy of the three omniscient ones until today? Although I guess you talked a bit about that, but anything else to say there?
Yes, I think actually Nyingma, I have a feeling, except for his Gonchokdel, I mean, his commentary on the San Yingbo and so on, I had a feeling for many centuries he was almost forgotten. Mm-hmm. And it was actually, in fact, we should also talk about Mindruling, because in Mindruling, the Techen Yapse, the Minlin Lochen Dharmashtri and Terda Lingpa, they saw no risk of the Therma teaching disappearing, but they saw a real risk for the disappearance of the karma teachings, Nyingma karma teachings. And this is not just a textual continuity, but Lungjun, Shejun, Trijun. It's a reading transmission, explanation, continuity, etc. So Terda Lingpa made so much effort to try to not only acquire the textual basis for these teachings that were usually excluded from the Tenjur. So those authoritative Nyingma texts that were excluded from the Tenjur later on assumed the status of this core corpus of the Karma. And this is due to the thanks to Terda Lingpa and Lochen Dharmashtri. But Karma teachings by itself will never stand on its own. You need Bodhisattva practices. You need Vinaya practices. There comes the Lochen Dharmashtri. Lochen Dharmashtri is a monk. He is a fully ordained monk. And his duty was, I think his composition of Dongzhenpa Samyama is not a coincidence. So it belongs, again, fits into the larger revival attempt of the Karma in Mindruling. And now Gesa Shenpen Taye, who had immediate connection with Mindruling, it was due to Gesa Shenpen Taye, who really thought Karma should be revived. And he went to Central Tibet in search of the Karma texts. And even that there is a story of how Mengathaten was discovered and really wished that he to find, discover more such texts. So it is through the efforts of Gesa Shenpen Taye with the inspiration of the Mindruling tradition that the Karma, not just a textual
text. It's 18 hours.
The Karma Dukchen, the Tinchok, the practices, etc. These were actually initiated, revived through the efforts of Gesa Shenpen Taye, etc. And only through Gesa Shenpen Taye's efforts, whom Mipham considered, by the way, Sangyin Yiba, he considered a Sangyin Yiba, starting from the Shisum Choga, all the way to Bodhisattva practice, all the Karma Dukchen was revived in central Eastern Tibet through Shenpen Taye's efforts, etc. Only then, through the effort, Mipham printed this, they prepared xylographic editions of his works, etc. They couldn't get much, but whatever were obtained, they compiled it, they printed it. And through these printing activities, Rongzongpa's works became more and more accessible to the let us say, to the rest of the, but I still suspect that Mipham, he could not fully explore the full potential of Rosenberg's works. This is my suspicion. And later on, of course, nowadays, through these efforts, I mean, it became.
Yeah, I may add here that, as Dorje said, I think Rongzompa was pretty much neglected, and his work remained a bit obscure until it was brought to light by people like Mipham. And today, I think if anyone in the audience want to know more about how Rongzompa's writings have evolved or how they've come to light, Dorje's partner Orna has done wonderful work on Rongzompa's works. So that's a good place to begin.
Great. And thank you.
Yeah, one thing is, I think his works are simply too difficult. Maybe it's not, it's very difficult to understand.
Interesting. So another question here, changing it up a bit in terms of topic, how do you see Buddha nature theory being shaped by Western studies and practice? Or is it far too early to even consider such influence?
The West, we have, it's a bit difficult, no? There are people, who, scholars from a, purely from a, from an academic and historical point of view, also Japanese scholars, by the way, Chinese and different institutions. I think through the discovery of the Sanskrit manuscript of Ratnagotra Vibhaga, which is in fact the only, let us say the only, work that is exclusively devoted to the Tathagata Gava and that survives in Sanskrit is the Ratnavati Vibhaga, right? And his commentary. And Takasaki's efforts and so on, Professor Ruig and Professor Schmidhausen and so on. I think the understanding, over understanding of the Tathagata Gava, at least among the Western academia, is more or less secured. I mean, it's quite strong, it's robust, I think. But on a practical level, I mean, Kama was often speaking of the Tathagata Gava practice. So I said, I do not really understand how to practice Tathagata Gava or how to relate Tathagata Gava in the practice, but I try to find a way. Is maybe Tathagata Gava is mainly a kind of a very inspiring theory that every sentient being is either a Buddha by nature or by nurture, right? You have the full potential. And these have so many implications on soteriology, ontology, epistemology, gnosiology, cosmology, mainly soteriology, and ethics, morality, etc. For example, I thought the impact of Tathagata Gava is, you know, Gekpe Dorje's Damsik Seltra, right? One of our Lobema is studying this. This is something that we can maybe learn from the Tathagata Gava. I don't know whether in the East and West we are learning from it. Maybe some people may say, if it's, we have all the potential of the Buddha, and maybe some of our fellow human beings would think, oh, that implies that I must be a Buddhist. In my view, there is no such implication. That means if you have the Buddha nature, it does not force you to be a Buddhist, I think. There is no such implication. But some people will fear that this is the implication. Why should I like Buddha nature theory? Because it seems to imply that I must become a Buddhist. No. All what Buddha nature theory is saying is you have the full treasure underneath your house. Whether you want to explore it or not is totally up to you, right? So this is actually the implication. But one interesting implication that we can draw from this Buddha nature theory is Gekpe Dorje, Velasavajra, he says in the Sawanyingpo, there is called in the Tsawe Damsik, one of the five fundamental precepts of Tantra precept is Yangda Lam Shubla Jam, right? One has to have compassion or affection towards people who have entered the Yangda Lam. And in this context, Gekpe Dorje speaks about Che Shi, four types of relatives, and one is a Rinwe Che or a Chi Che. This is where you see the implication of the ethical implication of Tathagata Gava is Rinwe Che. All sentient beings are relatives. Why? There are several reasons, but one is we have the Buddha nature, equally possess the Buddha nature, right? So all sentient beings deserve respect, deserve appreciation, and deserve to be left in peace or deserve to be helped because precisely they share the same element as I do. Right? So this is the ethical, practical implication. Right? So this is what we can learn from the Buddha nature theory in my view. And how is it happening? Is it happening? I don't know.
Yeah, this is a very good way of putting it. I think the sense of being a member of one family, the Buddha family. But as Dorji pointed out, with regard to academic studies, perhaps we have done so well in Western academia or Buddhist academic circles. What I personally think with regard to this interaction and encounter with the West is just as I suppose the idea of Buddha nature in Ratnagota Vivaga has developed through encounter with Adyavedanta and so forth, and similarly how the understanding of Buddha nature in Chan and Zen Buddhism has also been influenced by Taoist thinking or some local spiritual thoughts. Maybe we are also now seeing a new phase of understanding Buddha nature after its encounter with sort of Western thoughts. If you look at Western thinkers like Mr. Eckhart or Aldous Huxley, there's a lot of writings about this ultimate, the oneness of things, you know, the absolute reality. I suppose there will be a new sort of interpretation of Buddha nature coming out as a result of this encounter with similar thoughts that already exist in the West and even in Christianity, if you look at Gnosticism, maybe there will be some encounter, some similarities that will lead to a new understanding. So I think as it often happens, maybe this encounter of different ideas will give a new sort of chapter to Buddha nature studies and practice.
Yeah, one, maybe one wish, let us say now we can, as a people dealing with Buddhist ideas and Buddhist theories, especially Buddhists, not just Buddhist scholars, the conception of the Buddha nature is certainly a very noble idea in its conception, very noble. And I can personally believe that it's such a noble idea, but even a noble idea can take undesirable turns and becomes people with misuse or I don't know, misdevelop in a way. And we have some examples in the history of Buddhism is that this Buddha nature might be misused in such a way that people might commit some atrocities. I don't know how they can justify, but using the Buddha nature to do something inhumane. I mean, that is, it seems very counterintuitive, but it happens. So I think it is the, maybe perhaps it is the responsibility I would like to, not necessarily Buddhist scholars, but Buddhists to somehow, let us say, try at least to ensure that this noble idea remains a noble idea and is not misused in any way. Because Buddhist scholars would not prescribe this, but I think it is the responsibility of the, let us say, people who identify themselves as Buddhists, or at least who subscribe to this Buddha nature theory, that will have to somehow try at least to preserve this noble idea as a noble idea and prevent from, I don't know, miscarriage or some sort of an undesirable development.
Any more questions, Marcus, on Facebook or?
I think you've answered most of the questions. There's one question from Bhutan saying this is a very insightful conversation, but the concepts and terms are very dense and hard to comprehend. How can an ordinary Buddhist without monastic education access such profound teachings? Do you have any advice for everyone?
Karma, do you want to advise first?
Yeah, well, I think I was just looking at the question, and it's from Dechen. So Dechen, what we do at these conversations, now my connection is unstable. I don't know if you can hear me.
We can hear you.
Good. So at these conversations, we sometimes have sort of popular teachers who talk about Buddha nature in very basic terms. And at other times we have experts like Dorje, where we delve in a little deeper to sort of thrash out the nonsense. So I would ask Deshin to listen to other conversations we had. The recordings are there online on the website. There'll be some very practical, basic discussions. And then the other advice would be, yes, pick up these basic terminologies and and then soon you'll be able to follow even the more advanced conversations. And then use our online web resource. There's plenty for all sort of grades of audience, beginners, intermediate, all the way to advanced philologists and philosophers to learn from.
Yeah, it's true. With any given discipline, with any given topic, it takes some time to make sense. Even in the Shedra, we were told, I don't know if Kama heard this, first 4 years, you have just tried to do your best and study. You may still not understand, begin to understand. Only after 4 years, it might make some sense. So even when you devote fully, it's very difficult to understand this clearly. But I think we should say that the Dharma is anyway profound. So we cannot make it shallow for the sake of, so we'll have to make an effort. And given the interest, enthusiasm, diligence, I'm sure that at some point it will start making sense to all of us. And even now, I still try to continue to study. And so it's indeed understandable that it's not always easy. And they're all sort of, it's like trying to study a physics books or whatever. We need to invest so much time to make sense of the physics. So this is true with Buddhist philosophy, I'm afraid. But please don't despair. The main thing is preserve your interest, enthusiasm, and whatever one can get, I think we can, first of all, try to get that knowledge and then try to enhance it or deepen it.
Yeah, so I want to come back to you now for a few final questions. And I think the topic being the understanding of Buddha nature in the Nyingma tradition, I want to just see whether we agree on some of the points, especially on the positions held by Rongzongpa, Longchenpa, and Mipham, who happen today to be the representatives of the Nyingma scholarly world. So the topic you shared is Buddha by nature or Buddha by nurture?
Yes.
As for these three figures, I personally would say that they argue we are Buddha by nature. Is there any sort of hint that we are only Buddha by nature, or do you fully agree with that?
Sorry, did I understand correctly? Is there any hint that nurture, you mean?
Yes, we are Buddha by nurture and not by nature.
So this is your position?
These three people, yes. I think for the audience, it will give them some clarity as to where three people stand.
Interestingly, now I hope that I understood your position. Interestingly, all of these three guys seem to prefer, let us say, the what I call nature model, but they do not reject the nurture model. Why? How do they do so? And Mipham would have said, Nesuda Nangsul, he would use the mode of existence and the mode of appearance. Things appear as if there is a causal mechanism but if you go deep into the ontology, the sociology, then you realize that this nurture model doesn't work really especially for Longchen and so on. So, but it is very clear that Rongzongpa knew both of these models. He presupposes models, but then he seems to explain in the nature model in an inclusivistic way, in favor of nurture model in an inclusivistic way in favor of a nature model.
Yeah.
At the same time, accepting both models.
So this helps us also again explain their positions on what is definitive teaching and what is provisional teaching. Now, what you said, if I heard you correctly, is that these three masters would say the nurture model is a provisional one.
Yes.
Teacher model, the Tathagata Garba teachings that
claim
a primordial Buddhahood in us is the definitive one.
Yes. And also, you see, now maybe this is a little bit off. Maybe it's not really off. You really come to the Rigdang Marik difference, or even let us look at Nagarjuna. Actually, Rongzongpa is, I would like to call Rongzongpa Tibet's Nagarjuna in every sense. So he seems to say that Nyanglin Depa, you see, the relationship between Nyangde and the Korwa and Nyangde for Nagarjuna is, he said, in every regard, they are one. They're the two sides of the same coin, not the slightest difference, he says, right? Now, how would this work? So it is indeed saying, okay, the only model it seems to be that even Nagarjuna is presupposing is that when you penetrate the samsara and truly understand samsara in its true sense, you get nirvana, right? And this is in Yukti Shastika he's saying, right? So if the true, correct understanding of samsara is nirvana, this is the soteriological foundation for Dzogchen in my view. If you don't get this, then we have no, the Dzogchen makes no sense whatsoever. So all of these three guys, as I said, before they are Madhyamikas, they are Dzogchenpas. So
they are Madhyamikas only to make them better Dzogchenpas.
You can say in this way too.
Then there is this final one when it comes to characterizing them or classifying them into Rangtong and Shentong camps. As we discussed earlier, there are a lot of scholars, especially in the West, who have considered Longchenpa Shentongpa, have considered Mipham Shentongpa. I personally argue against that and consider Longchenpa Rangtongpa and Mipham also Rangtong. In fact, in his Songdre, he explicitly claims that he is a Rangtongpa, and his defense of Shentong in his Shentong Singhi Ngaro is only as a sort of intellectual provocation or intellectual exercise, not so much his own position. So now when we talk about this Rangtong Shentong classification, I think it's quite actually difficult to even use these terms uniformly, you know, even terms like Den Nampa or Denpa Drupa, they mean different things to different authors in different contexts. But earlier you brought up this topic of whether Buddha nature is tendril, dependently originated. I think that's a very clear sort of way of sort of categorically saying whether a scholar like Gyalpa Rongchenpa says Buddha nature is dependently originated or not. So using that yardstick, would you say Rongzongpa is a Rangtongpa, arguing that Buddha nature lacks its self-existence, meaning Buddha nature is not dependently originated? Is dependently originated, I mean. And then Longchenpa also does the same thing as does Mipham.
I think in this regard, I suspect that they share the same position. And I would like to say maybe, okay, you can prove me wrong. I mean, everybody can try to prove me wrong, is that this is exactly also the position of Nagarjuna, is that actually Tendril, even when you, in my Vienna presentation, I tried to, but I don't have the time to now present all my evidences. Is like, there are all kind of categories of Tendril too. But the basic idea without even using these categories is even Nagarjuna, Dile Di Jung, like from this arises this, this arises this. This is only in a naive way you can accept this. But actually he says, Ganji Kenike, but they make, he says. So what we as you normally assume to be arising dependently, he's saying categorically there's actually no arising at all, right? And in this regard, Gangshi Kenle Kepa Demake, this is so basic to understand the two-dimensional Pratisamutpada for Nagarjuna, which is actually one and the same. And I think both Rongzongpa, Longchenpa, and Mipham would agree on this understanding of the Tendril. And this is also one reason why I said this generation model would not work, because it's really like mirage water and the water. So if you really propose a nurture model or generation model, you have to say Yeah, there is a mirage water, and eventually we have to find a way to eliminate it with all kind of antidote or transform it. And they're saying, no, there is no way we can transform mirage water because there was no mirage water in the first place. So when you truly understand the indivisibility of this apparently two modes of reality as nothing but one, then you understand, you penetrate the true reality. So even the generation model and nature model doesn't apply anymore to the Dzogchen model, actually. It is a Rig Dharmarig model, I would like to say. So if you Rig, and this, I really feel that this is also the model that is presupposed by Nagarjuna. Coming to summarize, I think with the regard to how they understand these two apparent dimensions of Pratisamutpada as actually being only one, I think they would share. Maybe one should also understand, I forgot to mention that it was Professor Franz Karl Erhard in his study of Longchenpa, he said, one key concept that we often forget, but maybe many of us would get a heart attack. Why? What does he mean by this? Is he saying, okay, if you study Dudra, and to say that Chetamje Mebaselang, you can imagine the kind of implication that we have, right? So, but he's categorically claiming. So Chetamje Mebaselang Sam, and that, and Rongzongpa's idea of, I think the mirage, I mean, through the example of mirage, this the same thing, or Shimetsadal is the same thing. So in the, I think they all can be boiled down to the Shimetsadal kind of a concept.
So that's where you can see them depart from Shentongpa's like.
I forgot. I once traced a source by Dolpa where he criticized the Shimetsadal concept, but I forgot where. I couldn't retrace it. I want to find it. Yeah. I thought he should criticize, you know, because this is not in, is not in consonant with his own philosophy. And indeed, I was very happy that he finds a problematic with this Shimetsadal concept. Yeah. So there they depart, I think.
Wonderful. Final question, Dorji. So I'm sure you teach a lot about Buddha nature to your students. There might be some students working on Buddha nature topics or Buddha nature related topics. Where would you point the audience or interested readers to if they want to know more about Nyingma understanding of Buddha nature?
Yeah.
Your choice. Books to read. Or even online resources.
Yes, a bit difficult. It's not a realistic sort of idea, but at least aim should be, I said, never trust on the sources. But maybe it's not a nice idea to, I mean, not a good idea to tell at this moment, but maybe it's a little bit confirmed what you said before, is let us try to keep on learning. And maybe we can learn one, first try to read any source that you might find, but never absolutely trust any of the sources, but try to gain, as you go on enhancing your knowledge, you'll always profit from any given sources, even if they're not that great. But then I think we should make ourselves independent of these secondary sources and try to read from himself, Rongzongpa's work, their original work, Longchenpa's work. But if you cannot do so at the moment, any given translation, any given studies by any given author on these topics, I think we can still profit. Even if you don't understand 100%, I think even 60% is good enough. So, so read indiscriminately anything to do with this Buddha nature, but don't trust them absolutely in any way, not also my articles or anybody's article, but you can also try to look at my articles, especially my Vienna Zeitschrift, like this Wangchu 2004, and now where the Buddhas and Siddhas meet, published in the Sunni. And there are some few little articles dealing with Buddha nature. There is a, by the Indo-Iranian journal, I try to say, is Mipham a monist or something like that? These will also give some basis of Mipham's works. And Douglas Duckworth, Kamas, your own work, There are so many publications on Mipham. There are so many translations by Longshanpa, also Rongzongpas, but don't trust them, but please read it. Sorry, there is no one particular.
Well, we are nearly 1.5 hour into the conversation, so maybe it's a good time to conclude it. So, Dorji, thank you very much. We hope you'll come back again in the future. We can have another session. But thank you for joining us today. And also everybody around the world, thank you for sparing your Saturday and joining us. And we hope this message of Buddha nature will sort of spread to the rest of the world through all of you. Good night. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you, Marcus. Yes,
thank you so much.
Thank you, Karma, thank you for inviting me. And it's such a pleasure. And also, I really appreciate, it's an honor that you included me in this conversation, in fascinating dialogues and conversation. And we are all trying to learn a little bit. And I hope that all of us can make this journey. We can sometimes stumble along the way, but still, we can still try to keep on walking. And thank you so much.